$2,000. If that's the worst you'll do, I think you can live with that. You see, money management is a really interesting thing. Because it's scientific, we'll guess at it. And whenever you hear someone who has said something that sounds like it's a guess, go look it out yourself. And it's real simple. Any other questions about this?
Would you comment on the independence of each event? In other words, just because you've missed six in a row, you know, that whole thing, if you put
right.
a coin,
right.
that's a whole example.
Yeah. Okay, that's a very good point. If you got a coin, 50% chance of heads or tails, and I flip it, that means if I flip it in a long run forever, I'm going to end up with half and half. With me so far, I say yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good, audience participation. Now, I flip that thing 20 times in a row, and I get tails. What are the odds?
No.
I'm answering this question correctly. What are the odds? Beat the clock. What are the odds of that 21st flip being ahead? Are you sure? You guys ever hang on a cap table? I'm you. Right? Yes. What this is known as is independent probability. One is not dependent upon the other. Okay? They're all independent. So if your probability of hitting a race is 70%, and you've lost six in a row, are you now due?
No.
You could go a lot in a row, because the long run is a big long run. I mean, you could throw, just in a coin, you could throw 500 tails in a row, and it wouldn't affect the long run probability. If after the 500, it just went even, after that, those 500 skewed to one side wouldn't even add up to anything. So they are independent, and don't think ever that you do, because the probability is only when you look at the long run. What people call a law on average is really a law of large numbers, meaning large number of trials. Does that address that?
So you're not implying just because you miss all of those in a row that necessarily you'll do better in the rest of the cycle?
Right. I am not. I'm just assuming,
in other words, that may be a disaster cycle. They just,
right.
Yeah,
you can still lose money with this. I'm just saying, if you're at 70%, probably a worst case scenario, a really bad case anyway, would be you're going to go 50%. And let's say you had the worst thing in the world, you know, your first six were out, you're still going to do it. Okay? And even at 1.5, you could probably get down to as far as going, I would guess, just off the top of my head, you could work it out, you could probably have seven winners in that cycle, 13 losers, and still end up making money.
Yeah. One thing, if those six winners, though, come on the same day, you know, maybe stop after the third or fourth, because something may be a little off with your psychology. Check to see that you've rested the night before. Check to see that you haven't changed your whole baseline approach that day. There may be, you know, maybe you want to take a little psych check there. That something may be a little off. You're not even close on three or four races in a row. Start fresh again the next day. That may not be mathematically correct, but that kind of pays a little respect to the human side of the game, the psychological side of the game.
Michael, are you saying arbitrarily end that cycle and start a new one?
No. I've had it for 7 days. I'd say right before you, tell you, I've had disastrous days. And this psychologist guy with the pipe here, he says, well, why don't you stop after three? And I'm, oh, okay. Because he said something is off. Something probably is off. If you have records, and you keep your records, and you know, hey, I'm a 67% player. My average mutual is $9.50. I've got enough to make some serious money from the game. And you're not even close with your first few races. Something may be a little off. Now, you can either press ahead, maybe take that fourth in a row. But then you may just want to, I don't agree with it. So you ought to go ahead and make the next bet. Something may be just a little off. So I always kind of tend to back off. Something's going on. It's probably internal. So I don't want the 0-for-7 disaster. Now, if you choose to bet the rest of the card, you know, maybe you scale your bet down. I don't know exactly the answer to that. Other than if you feel there's something psychologically wrong, not to push or not to press. So there's a opposing point of view coming from practical experience. Now, I'm going to, you know, think hard and long about what Dan has to say, because, you know, mathematically, that's correct. Mathematically, the play isn't it, Dan? It's the play. It's making that investment.
Yes, however, to also, to back up what Michael said in the Kelly Criterion says bet into an advantage. And all Michael was saying is, judgmentally, I judge this to be a disadvantage.
just stop betting entirely.
Okay, go run.
So there is a time when you just have to know, wait a minute, I'm 3 hours sleep, up drinking last night, been wrestling with Jack, you know, all those sort of things. Your handicap and proficiency has changed. In other words, you're no longer a 70% handicapper. Today, you are 14% and they didn't tell me I. So,
let me give you a halfway kind of compromise there. Is the thing you don't want to do is think of that. You have two or three losers on one day and say, then you go back out and try to make things. Oh, I'm only going to half, my normal bet today. And then, you go 5 out of 6, which should be killing to make it work out. Okay? So you make up or correct for the mistake. But here's a halfway point. Go to a smaller bankroll and put some funds in your pocket and then keep betting, and but just on a smaller level so it doesn't lose that. Yes, Tom?
That's the right answer, because over the past, and I want to support what Michael said also, is for the past 10 years, my records show that every single time but one, following a killer day, I had an off day. Every time in picking. And so what I do is cut down to a much smaller bankroll after a really big day. It's just a psychological thing. And you're right, you've got to go to a smaller bankroll where you think that beating every time in spite of what you're doing.
I never thought I'd hear Brian ever use the word psychological.
He must be nuts, huh?
My day is crap.
Yes, question.
Did you review for Andy again how to start out and get to that comfortable level? What'd you first cover?
The first part about start out was regular bankroll, move up to your maximum, okay? And when maximum, I'm saying where you're still comfortable there, okay? In other words, in the example that Dick said, Mitchell's maximum was 400, where you're comfortable, 500 was not. So 400 would be the number where you're comfortable, okay? And then take bonds, drop back down, do that 3 times in a row, bank that money, and then just go back up to that level, as you do. When you're at that maximum again, just back up. And once again, there is a way to significantly improve your comfort level. I mean, think about it. Everyone has a different comfort. How can someone have a $20 comfort zone level and other person have a $100 comfort zone level?
Let's hear some response. What's your comfort level, anybody? Cry it out. Right.
500.
20 bucks.
20 bucks. Okay, well, yeah. What else?
300.
150. Okay, now this sounds strange, doesn't it? But see, the neat thing about supplement psychology, the stuff I've been talking about this weekend, is that Dick came up to me after the work and said, Dan, I never used to like these because I was such a kind of rah-rah, but I knew how to tell them who were very good, so it must be true. Well, this is not rah-rah, okay? It may look like it. This is the way human beings work. So let me show you what other companies on us. How much money do you need in the bank to feel comfortable? Let's see those numbers. 500? Anybody?
100,000.
No, seriously, do you have 100,000 in the bank right
now? Yep.
Great. And if you got to 80,000, how would you feel?
Restless.
Terrible, right? Anyone else? Low?
$20,000.
$40,000?
$20,000.
$20,000.
Okay.
$20,000. Right. So I can show you bums, who don't have anything.
And
let's just say, this was a real tax on you, wasn't it? The network. There's a lot of people who feel comfortable at $10,000 in debt. Okay? Now, what happens if they get $5,000 in debt? Any guesses? Oh, done. Go ahead. I got to go send it. What happens if that same person gets $15,000 in debt?
Compensation.
Pardon me?
Compensation
is enough. Right. And they go 50, they get back down to 10. So, see, these comfort zone levels live in us all different areas. Why do you think you get home court advantage in sports? Because you're comfortable there. The visiting team is not comfortable. So my point is we have comfort levels going from 150 to 100,000. If we have this couple around here, they probably tell us a couple of what, billion or something? What between you and that person, just their comfort level set different. And you can reset that comfort level. I can say we'll go into that later. Any other questions on money management?
Done.
Good.
Just a quick point. I've heard two views on if you're taking a 10% bet, you got $100 to go on a horse. And you want to go to 60-40 routine. Mm-hmm. I've heard you can do it two ways. Either put 60% on the low odds horse and 40% on the high, or you dutch them.
They're both dutching, technically. They're both all dutching. You know, that's what dutch, you pay, I pay.
But you can either be more accurate and figure out exactly.
Right. One is known as Dutching to the island, the other is Dutching a given percentage.
Or you can go the Mitchell route.
Right, exactly. So let me summarize those for you right here and tell you which one to go with.
Okay.
Dot and the methodology say 60-40. Okay? Or other people like Dutch to the island. Now, when myself and Mr. Wild and Purdy once entered the bank where we had root betting 20%, we were Dutching at the track, and it became a real hassle. To do it because you want to wait for the last minute, and then sometimes the last minute was the last minute, sometimes it was 5 minutes, you know, sound familiar? So 60-40 works out really well. Last time we suggested, I bet off track, I bet 50-50. Why? Because it's just so easy to calculate. I just subtract 4, divide by 4.5, my odds to $1. But, you know, with a calculator in 10 more seconds, I can figure out 60-40 as well.
You make a lot more money than you will get you to the odds, because your second choice in this method comes in about 40% of the time. If you got $2 out of him instead of 40, because you're Dutchy to the odds, you lose every time. What's your potential?
Exactly the point. So Dutchy to the odds is the opposite. Make sure that you get the same return, which even if your horse comes in. But it's not the way to make the most money. Just because of what Matt just said, because of our high percentage of seven horses or high odds that come in. Anyway, real simply, do one of two things. You asked a question over here to someone, how do you tell if it's a go or no go? The Bob Perry book is available through Purple, or get the card, the Dutchie card that's available through Huey. Then you look up your two odds, and it's either a go or a no go. And if it's 50 cents on the dollar or better, go. And that's your lower limit, which means you're probably going to average about a dollar. Okay. Let me just talk about this one real quickly to wrap up my man. Nice to be so depressed when it comes to these seminars because I've listened to these experts talk. And, Tom Bowman was famous for his tremendous high proficiency. I'm like, yeah, I don't care how long I work, I'm never going to be able to get that good. Have you ever felt like that before?
No.
Okay. Fear not anymore. Let me show you how to make all the money you want to make. And it's just real simple. 60%, anyone in here think they cannot hit 60%? I mean, I think you really believe that. I've never seen so many winners in one room before. By the way, this has just been really great to work with you. I really enjoyed it. Got a lot of good feedback. 50% winners at even money. What that means is, in a 20-year cycle, how many will you win?
12.
Right. How many will you lose? What's the difference? So, you've made 4 net units. If you've got $1, you made, $1 on each one, which you can't do, you would have made $4. If you've got $100, and that's, 60-40, how much money did you make?
Four.
Okay. 4 units a week is all you need. If your maximum comfort level is 500, what's 4 times 500?
2,000.
2,000 a week is how much money in a year. Just times the number of weeks that you work.
100,000.
How much?
100,000.
Yeah, 100 grand a year.
It's awesome. Make it 100.
Yeah, 100 grand a year. Now, you want to double that? Come to the next seminar, I'll show you how to improve your comfort level. That's the only real thing that stands in the way, is how much you can get down and in your comfort level. And it's that simple. So, when you hear these 70%, 75%, 80%, 65%, one horse, just think, hey, all I need is 6 out of 10, and even money. By the way, even money means, in the bottom that we're used to, $8. Okay? See, there's 20 races, you want 12, the average $2 mutual is $8. The reason that's even money is you bet 4, you got 8 back. Take away your original bet, which was $4, and you got $4 profit. 4 divided by 4 is 1. Do you have a question, Tim?
No. Okay. Yeah, I've got a question. I think it's for you more than anybody else. 40% of the second choices win. Now, your second choices, generally speaking now, are at substantially higher odds than that first horse is. Why the hell not reverse it? That 60% of your second choice, 40% on your first choice, and in the end, you probably make more money. That would be the hypothesis.
In the that's what Dick Mitchell recommends, but I make a lot more money handicapping than Dick Mitchell, but I will give him one credit. He makes a hell of a lot more selling his programs than I do. Chuck, what you got to say is what you're talking is theoretical, and I'm not theoretical. I don't care what anybody says. The practical application has been demonstrated since 1975 that it's best to bet proportionately 60-40 and have the psychological advantage of making money consistently rather than holding out and to make 60% on your low odds horse or your high odds horse and having those long periods where you win the race and lose the money. It's purely psychological, and that's really the name of the game, and I'm glad to have more and more people understanding that as opposed to mathematical. Mathematically, if you're a mathematician and you're 12 years old and can go the long run, do Mitchell stuff. If you're our age, mine being superior to yours, but you're got to be at least 40, years left, and Mitchell's long run will not take place in 40 years.
Right. That's exactly it. And I just want to give you one more case if you still have trouble with that. What I just mentioned was, when someone says something that sounds like it's just out of the top of their head, okay, check it yourself. So if you have your back cycle to 20, real simple, you sit down and make three columns. What would happen if I would have had these 60-40? What would happen if I would have had these to the odds? What would happen if I would have done some 50-50? And then try the Mitchell 40-60. Okay? And then after you've run 100 races through that, find out. Now, your particular thing might be better if you bet it, 10-90. But in general, for an entire group, 60-40 works out great. But it's real simple to test. Okay, let me wrap this up.
You have records.
By the way, feedback is the breakfast of champions. Write that down. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. Could you imagine any world-class athlete not keeping records? You know, how fast you run, baseball?
I don't know.
I just run. Pretty fast. Now, how high did you jump today? I don't know. Really high. Really good on me. Yeah. Bring them on.
Whole lots.
Right. You got to keep records so you know how you're doing. All winners
do. How do you know you've reached your comfort level?
You'll know.
Well, I'm really going to talk about this.
You're losing because you're reaching comfort level and you're not
thinking. Probably not. No, when you go to make the bet and you feel some physical manifestations of stress, tightness in the upper body, shortness of breath, sweat on the palms, your money's dripping wet, as Nick mentioned.
It's when your hair starts.
Your hair starts moving. Yeah, exactly. That's terrible. Okay, another thing that Nick alluded to that I want to correct right now is, Actually, we'll talk about reality, and I want to talk about a new reality. I'm going to create it for you right here. So that none of you are going to use it. And unfortunately, that has been true in the past. But I want to show you how you can move beyond that. What is it that stops you? You sit in this room, logically, it makes sense. Money management's the only way to go, no matter how you say it. And but the problem is you know a lot about money management now. And there's just so much written. I mean, anything new is ever written, we'll explain it, 100 times. However, what you achieve is something over here. Why is that? It's these barriers again, your habits, your attitudes, your beliefs, your expectations, your comfort levels. Real simply, let me give you a technique. Twice a day in the morning and in the evening, just as you wake up and just as you go to sleep, visualize yourself at the track in a relaxed state, going up to the window and placing your bet in proportion to your bankroll. And see the money coming back and you're happy and you come home and you show your wife that you doubled your bankroll this week, as opposed to making $32.16 or whatever. Visualize that. As soon as that becomes part of the subconscious picture, you can't help but have absolutely free flow, just like your free flow and everything else. Okay? So visualize in the morning, in the evening. Okay. To summarize the weekend around supplement psychology, a lot of people talking about the fact that they like the F card. In fact, they liked it so well in Vegas that they started calling me the Evan guy. Some nicknames, I don't know. What the F card was, to reiterate, is that it was a scotoma, what we call it in psychology, scotoma. This means a blind spot. But you have not only visual blind spots, but you have all sorts of sensory blind spots. Blind spots to smell, taste, touch, even thinking. There's just certain parts of your brain you don't even think. Your wife comes up to you and asks you, darling, I need $800 for a new sofa. You actually act like you think. You go through this whole process, no. And that really wasn't thinking at all. It was just a little habit that you went through. Every time someone asks you for money, you do this thing. So we have all sorts of blind spots around us. Just to show you how many there are. Everyone wearing a wristwatch, don't look at it for the next few minutes, okay? What I want you to do is take a piece of paper, cover up your wristwatch somehow. I'm going to take it off, that's fine. But don't look at it from this point forward. Take a piece of paper and write down the next 30 seconds, everything you can recount about that wristwatch. What shape is the face? Go ahead and do it now. What shape is the face? What color is it? Is there a second hand? Is there a name on it? Use your bathroom at home. Or your car or something. Go ahead. Drive, you know, you want to draw a little picture?
Your reality is a little bit false, and be careful of what beliefs you have. Just